Hello and welcome to the Beer Nuts Productions podcast. My name is Gough and today I am joined by a very special guest. In fact, I think the title of this guest's autobiography sums her up wonderfully well. It is called Sex, Drugs and the Electoral Roll. I've read it. It's a very, very good book indeed. So I'll just give an early plug to it now. Why not? Go buy a copy because it's a wonderful read. It truly is. The lady who wrote it is the leader of the Australian Reason Party. She is also a sitting member of Parliament in Victoria. It's Fiona Patton. How are you doing today, Fiona?
I'm doing really well, Gough, and I'm so pleased that we can finally get together and have this chat.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, I've got tons of questions, so we'll just plough straight in. Now, you have spent most of your professional career working in and around the sex industry. You were a sex worker for a short time. You have been a lobbyist and an advocate for the sex industry in a number of different roles. I'm curious as to what your number one takeaway, what is the number one thing you learnt being involved in and around the sex industry for as long as you were?
I guess one of the things that I learned is that people's perceptions of the industry could not be more wrong. People think that it's at the most positive level, it's something incredibly exotic. But at the other end, it's that it's something deranged and damaging and dangerous and dark. And in fact, the sex industry is filled with people that you would see in any other industry. Lots of mums and dads, single parents, Rotary Club members, all across the board of our community, and as are the customers of the sex industry. And while people don't like to talk about the fact that they've either been to see a sex worker or they may have, gone in to buy some sex toys on the weekend, I can assure you that a very diverse range of the population experiences the sex industry.
So don't judge a book by its cover. Is that your, would that be your number one takeaway?
Yeah, I think that's it. And I think unfortunately, the perceptions of the industry have led to some pretty draconian legislation about the industry that impacts both the individual at a level where there's a great deal of stigma against people who work in the industry. And then at a business level, there is completely unnecessary regulations that try and perceive sex, the act of sex, as somehow dangerous or perverse, when in fact it's the opposite. Well, that wouldn't be here without sex.
That's very true. It's very true indeed. But so I guess that leads to another point, I suppose, which would be, what would be your advice to someone who is, nervous, let's say, for the want of a better word, about expressing themselves sexually, whether they might be scared of being kink shamed or whether they might be, nervous about what their partner or friends might think? What would be your advice to someone who about expressing themselves sexually and not to be afraid about it, I suppose?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question, Gough. And I think, I started in the industry and started representing the industry pre the internet. So when you think now, just the way you can find your tribe online and the way that, you can get together with people who have similar desires or similar interests in a way that we couldn't do pre the internet, I would encourage people to find their tribe. And, you might quite often think I'm the only gay in the village, or the only, plushy in the village, or, the only, S&M person in the village, and you'll find that you're actually not.
Cool.
So I would certainly look at finding your tribe online. And then, your personal desires, your personal what turns you on, what makes you happy, is not something you should be judged for. And yes, I know it's difficult to sometimes talk about that, but I think you'll find the words when you find your tribe. And I think be open, and you'll probably be surprised that people aren't judgmental, or people are just dying to have that same conversation with you about what their desires are. And sex is probably the most non-violent, most life-affirming thing that we can do. And so I think we need to come out of the closet in so many ways. I mean, we're still fighting against stigma, not just on the grounds of people being working in the sex industry, but on the grounds of people's sexuality. We're not there yet. But the more of us who are open, the more of us who speak about it, the greater the information is about our industry.
So switching gears a little bit, Fiona, I'd like to talk a little bit about disability. So being someone who is blind, I can tell you that discrimination is alive and well in this country because I discussed it in length in my documentary, I Will Not Go Quietly, where I was denied an education, I've been denied employment opportunities and business opportunities, and people can also watch the speech that I gave at Parliament House in Canberra on YouTube, where I also discussed that. And I provided facts. It wasn't opinion-based, it was fact-based. So I suppose it's a big question, but I guess my number one question to you, Fiona, would be, as a legislator, what would be some things that we can do so that people with a disability aren't treated like second-class citizens in this country?
Gough. I mean, it's a big question, and I think there are so many things we can do, and it is across the board. But you're right. I mean, discrimination around people with disabilities is still unbelievably common in our community and in our nation. And it just seems extraordinary that this is still happening. And I've just been talking about this at Parliament just the other day, where I met with a number of people with disabilities to talk about how we could actually make our parliament more accessible. You know, and if there is one place that should be accessible to all Australians and, well, in my case, all Victorians, it should be our parliament. And we have spent the last 3 years trying to make our website more accessible. It's still not there. You look at the Victorian Parliament and the first thing you see in this quite grand 19th century building is these giant steps leading you up to the front door of our parliament. If you have mobility issues, it is the most uninviting way to welcome people to our parliament. I think the federal parliament has done a lot better in that there's a lot less. It's a lot easier to navigate there. We need to keep on improving our planning regulations. I actually put up some legislation a couple of years ago around the vilification of people with disabilities. You know, I was appalled by people feeling the freedom to say extraordinarily horrible things to people online about their disability. You know, and we protect people from vilification on the grounds of their race and religion. We don't protect them on the grounds of their disability, and that needs. I'm concerned about the Religious Freedom Bill that will also give people with religious beliefs some permission to say that someone's disability is because God doesn't love them, or because they've been taken by the devil, or to create a better and more tolerant society, we need our planning laws to recognise this. We need our local government to recognise this, that when we are building new towns, when we are building new things, that it should be accessible for all. We've got discrimination legislation, but I don't think we enforce it enough.
You do raise a good point, but what about things like public perception? Like, I mean, I could go somewhere and the perception of the public around people with a disability is just wildly inaccurate. So how do we fix things? Like, I mean, is it as simple as like some advertising, an advertising campaign? And I'm big at education in schools, like, 'cause the younger you teach children, the better it is, obviously. So if kids at a young age understand that someone who's blind, for example, is totally cool, but, you know, it's just their eyes don't work so well, so they need to have a little bit of help with A, B, and C, or whatever it could be. But, like, I think education is really, really important. But it's difficult, I suppose, to enforce education. But, I mean, what sort of things can we do to get rid of public stigma, do you reckon?
I think it's a really good question, Gough. It's a really good it's something that we should set as an objective to achieve. And so that would be a greater, I think, probably you're right, greater awareness during while we're at school, but greater awareness in the media and greater and greater visibility in the media. You know, we've seen some really tremendous disability sports stars and Karen Alcock and, you know, doing amazing things. But, you know, where are the people on Home and Away? Where are the news presenters? Where are the politicians? We do have politicians with disabilities, and there's no doubt about that. And we've seen some really fierce, wonderful members of parliament in various states and federal parliament who have disabilities and are great. But we need to see more of that. We need to see that greater visibility. We need to see it in our shopping centres. We need to see it in all of the different areas that we work. And I'm sorry, because I know you're blind and I keep saying we need to see it, which is probably, you know, something I need to correct. But we need to make this concerted effort to make sure that people with disabilities are on the front line, and that we enable that to happen. And we make our... You know, we make our websites possible. I think COVID has had this extraordinary thing that, you know, we've recognised that we can work differently. We've recognised that our old ways of working and not necessarily the way that we all have to work. And I hope that that actually helps us in enabling people with different abilities to be able to, to be able to take part in a range of work that we may not normally have seen. So I think there's that. I'm just in the middle of a justice inquiry, and the number of people with an acquired brain injury in our prisons is disgusting. It is absolutely disgusting. We are literally locking people up because of their disability, rather than providing support, rather than providing education, rather than providing employment. And that has to change.
Well, how do we then? What's the answer? How do we?
We need to be proactive about this. And I certainly think, you know, as I say, I was at an event the other day where Parliament was looking at, I think every government department actually is where we can start. Governments can provide these levers. So if governments start to proactively talk about this, and we actually talked about this, you know, we were asking what percentage of people working in government departments have a disability, and they don't measure it. They know how old everyone is. They know what gender they are. They probably know a whole bunch of other things, demographic information. But many, there's probably only, when we asked this question in the state government, I think there was only the health department that actually kept a tab, that actually counted that, that actually measured it. So one thing I think for governments, as I say, who can be the levers for reform, they need to start measuring this. And when they start, and when they are advertising, and they're the biggest advertisers, and they have more money to spend on advertising, that needs to be in there. That needs to be embedded. We need to embed this in our government communications, in our government employment strategies, but as I say, also in the way that we measure our government departments, and the way we measure the way we make governments accountable to that. So I would like to see a lot more measuring of the involvement of people with disabilities in all levels of government.
So let's go to another cheery, happy topic of abortion, because, you know, so now, look, I'm a big fan of Samantha Bee. I think she's really funny. She, for those who don't know, she's an American Tonight Show host, but I think she's probably more a political commentator than anything else, but she's very good. Now, she has been using a phrase lately that abortion is healthcare, brought on by some recent laws that have been brought about in America. So I've got a three-part question. Firstly, do you agree, is abortion healthcare? Secondly, in Australia, does Medicare cover abortion? And thirdly, if Medicare doesn't, should it?
Three very good questions. With very simple, probably very simple answers. Question one, is it healthcare? Yes, it is. Question two, is it covered by Medicare? In certain circumstances, yes, it is. So if you are lucky enough to be able to get an abortion through the public health system, it's covered by Medicare. Unfortunately, it's very difficult to get a termination through the public health system. So you're much more likely to have to go to a private provider, and then it's not covered. Certain elements of it are covered, but you're still going to be considerably out of pocket. So that needs to be improved. We rely very heavily in this country on surgical termination and on surgical abortion, where many other countries rely on what's called a medical abortion, which is around taking IU486 or a different type of hormonal drug that will induce a miscarriage or induce a termination, and that is far less intrusive, and it also is something that regular GPs, in fact, registered and fully qualified nurses could provide. So we've really. Those are the areas that we could really improve, because if you live in regional Australia, your access to healthcare and to sexual reproductive healthcare, such as termination, such as even morning after pills, such as even contraception itself, is far more difficult. You know, you could live in a town where you had a Catholic chemist and refuses to provide you with contraception, and in particular the morning after pill if you've had a problem. It's also part of healthcare because it also should be part of our education. We probably don't talk enough about sexual education, around sexual education. We don't talk enough about how to practice safe sex. We probably talk more about it than we talk about sex and pleasure, but we could talk more about preventing unwanted pregnancies, and that should be front and centre, because, you know, in everything I do and in everything I learn, prevention, early intervention is by far the better way to go for the individual, but even for the cost.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, on the media sort of landscape, sort of going down that sort of road a little bit. Now, like I said earlier, I like Samantha Bee because, you know, she's very funny, but she'll take a subject, for those who don't know, and she'll do a deep dive into that subject, and you're left with no doubt as to her opinion on said subject. Now, there is nobody like her on Australian TV. Now, my own personal view for that is that Australian executives in the TV world are too cowardly to put somebody like that on Australian television. Are you frustrated that there's not somebody like a Samantha Bee that's on Australian TV, just really sort of not getting stuck into politicians, so to speak, but just talking about things like trans issues and abortion issues and marijuana issues and race issues and all those sorts of things? Is it frustrating for you that you don't see that sort of stuff on Australian television?
It is frustrating because it's, you know, looking at, say, cannabis, for example, you know, we know that a large proportion of the population has used cannabis, a large proportion of the population uses cannabis, and yet we never talk about it. So it's, you know, people, again, it's that well, where we started, where, you know, how do you find your tribe? And how do you think, you know, how do you understand that you're not alone or you're not some weirdo? And that requires us to, yeah, to do more work in this area. Yeah, I wish we had an Australian Samantha Bee, and I wish that we, I wish our free-to-air media wasn't so conservative. But, you know, having said that, I think we've got some, you know, we've got some really great, we've actually got some really great programs. They probably don't pick, they're not as punchy and as funny as Samantha Bee, but, you know, you can't ask that on the ABC. Where, you know, there's, it's a great program and it talks about a whole range of taboo subjects. And I, so I think there's some things that Australia does really well, you know, and I think particularly the ABC and SBS really do deep dive. They don't do it with humour. And I think it's the humour that provides the cut through. And 100%. I've been actually talking to my team about, you know, political, about our, you know, election campaigns and just saying, we've got to inject humour. I mean, that was, when we started the Sex Party, it was funny. Like, we were serious about a whole range of things, but Sex Party, just the words together were funny.
Absolutely. Now, well, that brings me to sort of another point about Fiona Patten is I don't mean to sound rude at all, but I mean, if I was to go out on the street, a very few people, if I asked 100 people, very few would have heard of the Reason Party and Fiona Patten. And I think the number one reason is because you would find it very difficult to get on mainstream media. How frustrating is it for you that it's kind of like a little bit of pushing shit uphill for you to get your message out there? How annoying is that for you?
It's really annoying, Gough, and I don't think I'm alone. I think every small political party would feel the same frustration. You know, with the exception of those that are, you know, that, with the exception of people like Pauline Hanson, that reflect the views of very few of us, yet because she says such stupid things, the media puts her on. Clive Palmer, because he lies and he says such outrageous things, he gets on. So, yeah, being sensible, having, you know, common sense views, being reasonable is not, you know, is not what media wants to see. They want to see controversy. They want to see combat and opposition and
the circus.
They want to see the circus, and that's not the way, that's not the way that we rock and roll. I'd have to say in Victoria I've probably had a better run. In Victoria, I do get, you know, I speak to the media pretty regularly down here. But to get that national view, as I say, there are lots of other sensible political, small political parties out there that would be lamenting in the upcut, you know, in looking at the election, in the forthcoming election, that it's going to be really hard for them to get on the media, to get any cut through. And they're, you know, and Clive Palmer will spend tens of millions of dollars, and I find that despicable. You know, I would actually, I've been calling for a cap on spending. So everyone talks about caps, you know, stopping donations. You know, the best way to stop donations would be to stop spending. So if you couldn't spend, if you could only spend so much, you're not going to get the donations because you can't spend them. So I would like to see caps on spending. I think, you know, as we saw Clive Palmer affected the last election through his spending, he's committed $60 or $70 million of money he's raised by, you know, wrecking our climate and digging up minerals that really should be part of all Australians' good fortune, not just his. But anyway, I'm greatly concerned about the effect, the impact of people like Clive Palmer, people like Clive Kelly, and the undue attention that they get.
Well, last question, Fiona, is when is Australia going to come to its senses and legalise marijuana?
I thought I was going to convince the Victorian Premier to do it this year. I wasn't successful. I think I came close. But when you look at the polling, we're nearly at 50% of Australians believe it should be legalised. So I think it's imminent. I would like to say that we will see it within the next 5 years.
Oh, okay.
Cool. I don't see, I see even some, I see some police policy changing as well in this area. And, you know, we're seeing a shift. I did an inquiry into the use of cannabis in Victoria. If listeners are interested, just Google that. The use of cannabis in Victoria, you'll find the report. And almost all of the experts agree a regulated market for cannabis is safer, reduces crime, and reduces harm, and also can reduce young people from accessing cannabis. So if you want to keep cannabis out of children's hands and criminals' hands, then regulation is the way to go.
And also you'll make a ton of money in taxes as well.
We're talking about a $9 billion industry that is not taxed. And imagine the number of schools and roads that we could build with the tax income from that source.
Absolutely. Now, Fiona, if people want to learn more about the Australian Reason Party and Fiona Patton in general, besides your awesome book, which they need to buy, which is Sex, Drugs and the Electoral Roll, where can they learn about the Australian Reason Party and Fiona Patton?
Both of our websites, fionapatton.com.au. Just Google Fiona Patton or reason.org.au.
FionaPatton.com.au, and also just Google the Reason Party Australia, and she'll come up as well with and with the election coming up. Obviously, you'll have a whole bunch of information where people can check out their local candidates and all that kind of stuff as well, I assume as well. Yeah,
that's right. We'll be running in the Senate around Australia, so we hope that a voice of reason can have a presence in the Australian Senate, a much needed voice of reason.
Very cool.
I might add.
No, well, what a great note to end on. So thank you so much again, Fiona, for joining me today. I really do appreciate your time.
No, thanks. It's been great. I've really enjoyed it.
Absolutely.
And I just want to say I really enjoyed listening to my partner speak to you. It was during lockdown and I hadn't seen him for months, and I just loved listening to your conversation with Robbie Swan. It was almost brought tears.
No, he's a cool dude. I liked Robbie because all I needed to do was ask about three questions and you just wind him up and let him go. So he was a great interview. And if people go to the archives, they can check out that interview I did with Robbie Swan, because it was very interesting. He had some really cool things to say as well, and he's quite a funny dude as well. So he was very cool. But no, look, that does bring us to the end of this week's episode of the Beer Nuts Productions podcast. Make sure you like and subscribe to the podcast. Rate and review 5 stars is always good. And of course, beernutsproductions.com is your one-stop shop for all your entertainment needs. So until next time, we will talk to you then.